So welcome everybody. This is the 8th lecture in our course on perspectives on bhikkhuni ordination by the Learning Buddhism Study Initiative and the Numata Center of Buddhist Studies at the University of Hamburg. And it is my great pleasure today to welcome bhikkhuni Professor Dhammananda, who is going to speak to us on the topic of bhikkhuni sangha in Thailand. Professor Bhikkhuni Dhammananda Thiri is now the abbot of Song Dhammakayakani Monastery in Thailand. She taught at Thammasat, a leading government university in Bangkok, for 27 years before taking early retirement to be ordained. She was fully ordained in 2003 and has become the first bhikkhuni in Theravada Buddhism in Thailand. As an academic, she is known for her engagement in Buddhism, environmental concern, and gender issues. She has written more than 100 books, now mostly on the establishment of bhikkhuni sangha in Thailand and Southeast Asia. With this, I leave you and my pleasure to hand over to Professor Bhikkhuni Dhammananda.
Thank you, Venerable Angalio. Yes, my topic, I will be speaking on bhikkhuni sangha in Thailand. First, whenever Analogo just put bhikkhunis in Thailand, but I would like to add the word bhikkhuni sangha, which includes both the samaneri and sikkhamana. Sikkhamana is another class of samaneri who are on the way to become bhikkhunis. I would like to show you our map. This map will come back again towards the end of my talk. Thailand has been a unified nation for more than 700 years, since 13th century AD. The Thai Sangha originated from Sri Lanka, hence called Langa Vangsa. But very interestingly, for the Siam Vangsa, then you have to go to Sri Lanka. If you look for Langa Vangsa, family of Langa, then you have to come to Thailand. But the bhikkhunis never arrived in this land. I would like to talk about the fourfold Buddhist, that is, bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, laymen, and laywomen. This is very interesting because in the Buddha's time, he started mentioning about the fourfold Buddhist even before the time the bhikkhuni actually arrives. So this structure the Buddha had in mind from the start. If you recall, when the Buddha was enlightened, the Mara came to ask the Buddha, now they were enlightened, you can pass away. But the Buddha said, not until the fourfold Buddhist, namely the bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, upasaka, and upasaka, not until they are fully established. What did he mean by fully established? We'll see that this actually describes our responsibility as we are one of the fourfold Buddhists. Number one, he expected us, meaning all the four groups, not just bhikkhunis or bhikkhus. One, to study the teaching. Number two, to put it into practice. This is the beauty of Buddhism, that we don't just talk about the text, but we also put the teaching into practice. And number three, to defend the teaching. We can defend the teaching only when we know the teaching, we study the teaching, and we can defend it with our own experience only when we have practiced it. So the last one, to spread the teaching. This is very important. Many people often say that by us women joining the order, we would bring about the decline of Buddhism. Is it true? The Buddha said otherwise. The Buddha responded to Venerable Kimpila. Venerable Kimpila asked the Buddha, how is Buddhism decline in the future? This is how the Buddha said, that when the fourfold Buddhists do not pay respect to Buddha, to the teaching, to the Sangha, and when they do respect each other. This is very interesting. Very interesting that we have to take note. Now, I bring you to Thailand in the year 1928. Very interesting. I consider this the first wave of the Bhikkhuni Sangha. One man, his name is Narin Pasit. Narin is his name, Pasit his family name, but people generally call him Narin Glung. Glung is his nickname, Narin Glung. He was the very first Thai person who actually talked much about the fourfold Buddhist. And he was very critical of the Sangha. I showed you, this is old photo. The family of Narin Glung. This is him here in the center. And this is Sara, who later on became Bhikkhuni. And this is Jongli. Jongli, the younger sister, who also became Samaneri. And this is how he looked. And because of his involvement in Buddhism and his being critical of not only of the government but also of the Sangha, so what happened is that he was put in prison many times. This is how he looked when he was in prison. They chained him. This is a very well-known case of Sara and Lee. Sara is the one who is seated. I think the four in the seated row, all of them were Bhikkhunis. And Jongli, the younger sister, standing here. All the four in the back, possibly Samaneri. Now, so there's much discussion at that time. But what happened with this ordination is that it is the father who had intended that in order to fulfill the fourfold Buddhist, Bhikkhunis should be introduced. And these two daughters were so obedient that they actually followed the father. And, you know, the father said you should be ordained, so okay, they were ordained. But the ordination process was, not transparent. Number one, up till they died, up till all of them died, they never mentioned who gave them ordination, who was the preceptor, how the ordination was given. That was not known. So when you study the history of the Bhikkhuni Sangha and try to establish a new one, go back and see what are the drawbacks of that time. Number one, I would say, because the ordination was not transparent. Number two, the nuns themselves were not educated. We often talk about Sara and Jongli, but in this slide presentation, I showed you that at least there were eight of them, but people just focus on Sara and Jongli. And interestingly, Narin himself, he was a very educated man. He could write in English, he could write in French. And he, during that time, 1928, maybe we just started to have printing press. He was using printing press the best way he could, you know, so he was bringing out all kind of books, you know, to educate the Thai public. But his daughters were not educated. Sara could not read. Sara, the Bhikkhuni, she could not read. And of course, because they couldn't read, they didn't have Vinaya or Dharma study. So, in fact, we could say that they didn't have their own stand. They just followed the father. And the last one that I see as a drawback for this very first attempt to introduce Bhikkhuni and Samaneri to Thai society, the protest, there were lots of protests from the government, from the Sangha, and from the public. The protest was more towards the father rather than the issue of the Bhikkhunis. Now, I just said early aborted. This attempt, the first wave of Bhikkhuni Sangha in Thailand was aborted. with cloudy circumstances. I give you the story. They were arrested. Both Sarah and Jovi were arrested. When the police were approaching their house, the place where they were staying, all other nuns dispersed and disrobed. The two nuns were arrested and taken to the police station. Sarah remained. She was already 20 years old and she was already a bhikkhuni. So the police literally took off the robe from her body. There was one photo that I saw that she was actually on the ground and they pulled out the robe from her. And she was put in prison for a couple of days. They let her out afterwards and she was not allowed to put on the robe. So the father somehow arranged so that she was wearing grey robe. But they were still supported by some senior monks. Very interesting. One time they went up north, maybe in Nakhon Sawan. The chief of the province sent the order to the abbot to drive away these two people. The abbot said, responded to the senior monk that I don't see any mistake. You know, some monks from foreign countries, they come and they stay with me, no problem. So why should I send away these two bhikkhunis? So for the abbot to be able to say this to the chief provincial, that was quite remarkable. And I have had kind of psychological support from the crowd. Now what happened was, they still remain as bhikkhunis. They still go out for alms round. Then one morning when they were going out for alms round, this one man, he came on a horseback, just came and grabbed Sarah and took her away with him. Nobody knew what happened. But just this kind of story, you know, kind of end bhikkhuni issue from that time. I don't think that he actually harmed her. But just to cause the news so that people, oh, this is already paparajika, you know, already defeat. But in fact, even if she was raped out of her will, that is not considered paparajika. So that's how this case came to a close. But what happened, the result of this came to our time. That is still effective to our time. It's 1928 Sangharaja's order. The order, of course, the order addressed only to the Thai monks. For the Thai bhikkhus not to give ordination to women, either Samaneri, either Sikkhamana, or Bhikkhuni. That order remained up till now. Now, 4 years after that, the first time we had constitution was in 1932. By law, everyone can follow one's own religious belief and practices according to our law. The order should be lifted, that Sangharaja's order, to be lifted after the constitution was granted. But as 2006, it was still referred to as the reason for not accepting bhikkhunis. So we are talking about history. We are talking about the first wave, which happened in 1928. But the result of that is still effective, even for us, third wave. Now I bring you to second wave. Second wave is 1971. Now, Venerable Warren Michael Bilasin and Sarah and Jovi, they were contemporaries. But Sarah and Jongdi were ordained when they were young. Whenever Waramai, when she was already, she was in her 40s, you know, much more mature. I would like to compare between these two sets of women. Now, I just give you brief biodata of Whenever Waramai Kabilsin. She was educated. She was a teacher. She was a leader. She was involved in social activities. And she studied the Buddhist texts well. As compared to Sarah could not read. The first wave, she could not read. Whereas the second wave, she studied the texts well. And she had clear ordination procedure. Understood clear ordination procedure. And she had 15 years of preparation. She shaved, maybe just like Sydney, shaved and put on a kind of light yellow robe. By that time, Thai nuns, they were wearing white robe. They were not ordained, but somehow you call them nun. And she insisted of I will come to the question later on, but if I look at the question that you are posting, then I will not be able to make up with my time. I will come back to the question later on. So, yes, so she shaved, and she was like a machi, you know, but she was wearing light yellow for 15 years. By that time, she already bought the land, you know, and started this temple, this building. As an educator, she was a writer, she was a journalist, she was a teacher, she was editing books and editing magazines, and also she was a news reporter. So the background is very different from the first wave. As of Buddhist knowledge, she's self-educated, and she learned about the existence of the bhikkhunis from the text. She was convinced that the bhikkhuni ordination was given by the Buddha. This is, I think, is a great, great understanding, so that she had strength to do what she wanted to do. And of course, in Thailand, she asked many monks, but all of them said not possible, because the bhikkhuni died out. Bhikkhuni Sangha died out, and in order for you to start ordination of bhikkhuni, you need bhikkhuni sangha to give you ordination, and you need bhikkhu sangha to give you ordination. Therefore, it is not possible. But she looked for possibilities and searched. Now she started searching outside Thailand. And with the help from a Chinese monk in Thailand, he was so kind. He translated Dharmagupta Vinaya for her. Patimokkha, the Pratimoksha for her to study. Just to prepare herself to go for full ordination. And finally, she made a connection to Taiwan. In order for her to prepare for ordination, she studied from the text, and she was making connection in a wider circle. By that time, she purchased this land, already with intention that it must be big enough to build a temple. According to this law, it must be 6 rai. 6 rai is 6 Thai acres. She bought this land and she donated to the temple 6 rai so that we could start the temple. And then she already started construction of the Uposatha Hall. Uposatha Hall is the main shrine where you can perform Sankhakamma. Now, during these 15 years of preparation, before she took full ordination, when she was more ready, in 1971, she proceeded to Taiwan to receive full ordination. And her preceptor, we learned from the first wave that it was not transparent who gave them ordination. So by this time, we made sure the preceptor was Venerable Tao Anfas. He was a professor, and he was also... he had similar interests like Venerable Waramaika Vilasing. That is, he was a writer. And he also brought out this monthly magazine, same as what she was doing. So somehow, you know, he really had great appreciation of her, and she took him as her preceptor. She was ordained by a chapter of 13 senior monks. But at that time, it was still single Sangha ordination. It's only the Bhikkhu Sangha, not the Bhikkhuni Sangha. So in 1971, she is the first Thai woman to receive full ordination in Dharmaguptaka Vinaya. This is her work, just to show you some of her work. This is how she gives Dharma talk and guide meditation. And this is the front gate, which is now changed. If you come and see that we have now lifted up the gate, the entrance. But you already see the Uposatha Kara. This is the Uposatha Hall in the background. At the same time, she was running a school. These are the children's. This school had more than 500 students. she tried to prepare the Sangha, but it was not successful. I'm being critical now as an academic looking at my own mother. She got Jen, but she did not get the training to train others. That was because everything else was done in Chinese, because it was done by the Chinese Sangha. So these women did not stay, you know, they stayed with her for 6-7 years, but all of them disrobed afterwards. I look at the second wave and I see the drawbacks like this. Number one, ordination was from Taiwan in Dharmakuppam, the Kavinaya. But whenever Varamaitreya Singh came back to Thailand, she was practicing very much Theravada because she was grown here. You know, she grew up here in Thailand, and that's the only thing she saw is Theravada. She did not get the training to continue the ordination from the Sangha. Number one, there was no proper candidates. Number two, there was no proper Sankagama rituals to continue. So that's why when we come to the third wave, we have to fill in all the drawbacks of the first wave and as well as second wave. The Vinaya difficulties. I look at the Vinaya and see the difficulties from the point of view of Vinaya. Number one, she could not handle the shift from Dharmakuttaka to Theravada. Number two, she did not receive training. She went to receive ordination, but not the training as Dikuni. And number three, explaining on this second point, is to be trained as a bhikkhuni. I think one has to be in the bhikkhuni sangha. This I learned from my own experience. The very first year when I was my teacher, I wanted to learn the recitation of the Padimoksha, the 311 precepts. My preceptor said that, but we have to recite in the bhikkhuni sangha. I cannot recite with you, just the two of us, we don't do it. We have to have at least 5 members. So in my very first vassa with my teacher here, I invited my teacher here. So we had to invite 3 other bhikkhunis to be together as Sangha. That's why I really see so much importance to have bhikkhuni Sangha and not just individual bhikkhunis. Many rituals, many Sanghakamma must be done in the Sangha, in the community of bhikkhunis. And also some of the nuns, some of the seminaries who are asking for full ordination and they live alone in the West, I always suggest to them that better that they remain as seminary. Because once you become bhikkhunis, there are so many other sankhakamma, so many other rituals that you need to perform with the sangha, and it will be very difficult. So my suggestion for the Western country interested for the Theravada, to continue on the Theravada Vinaya, is best is to form like, you know, five women together. You know, you are ordained together as Samaneri, and then you are ordained, fully ordained together as bhikkhunis. You know, receiving dana from lay people, of course she was receiving dana from lay people, but to perform Sankakama, she could not do it. So this is this picture is the picture of the present day that we see lots of bhikkhuni Sangha. This one is in front of the Ubosatha hall in the back. And the procession of Nagini, you know, those who are the candidates who are becoming Samaneri. And now we have full procession with lay people joining, supporting the ordination of women. Then I talk about the third wave. The third wave, I was fully ordained in 2003. But before that, I was already giving training to white robe lay women, upasaka, upasika, for 12 years. I was giving training to lay women for 12 years before I took full ordination. And I give a brief bio data of myself. It's important we learn from the first wave that without education we cannot go far. So we have to have high education. And we need Buddhist studies. I learned from first wave and second wave that without Buddhist, strong Buddhist academic background to back you up, it's going to be very difficult. Then I was involved with the bhikkhuni issue. Since 1984, that's the beginning of the newsletter. This newsletter reporting on the activities of the Buddhist women around the world. And with this newsletter actually brought about the next one, that is Sakayatida International Conference on Buddhist Women. This happened in 1987. That was the first year that I actually met Venerable Champa there in Bodh Gaya. I did researches on Vinaya. My thesis was on a comparative study of Bhikkhuni Patimokkha and then the translation of the Bhikkhuni Patimokkha of the six schools. Then some more books, Beyond Gender, A Different Voice, Women Strengthening Buddha, so on and so forth. This is only collection of papers that I have been giving at different conferences. I would like to talk about the lineage that I have taken was from Sri Lanka. The Theravada lineage came from 1998. I'm very grateful for Venerable Analayo for his paper on this particular ordination. It's spelled out very clearly. And it has been translated in three other languages. I just received a copy in four languages. So that ordination in 1998, the first international Bhikkhuni ordination in Bodh Gaya, is a start from all of us, the Theravada lineage. Then after full ordination, the first two vasas, this is according to Vinaya, I have been trained with my preceptor. So I invited my preceptor over to our temple, and then we were trained together with the Bhikkhuni Sangha, inviting Bhikkhunis from other countries to come and together during the first two vasas. Yes, just now I just go back to read Venerable Champa's question. Yes, for Machi and for eight precepts, we are not considered ordination. There are only two levels of ordination in Theravada. Number one is Pakpacha, that is to become Samaneri. And number two is Upasampada. Upasampada is to become fully ordained Bhikkhuni. So this is just to give you some ideas of the once when the Samaneri, once when women started to know about more about the ordination of women, as you see each year we have two ordinations for Samaneri, one in April, 6th of April, and the second one is in December the 5th, 9 days. This is temporary ordination. The training, I emphasize on the training, because to get only ordination is problematic, and we have seen that in the first wave and in the second wave. Therefore, the training is very important. We started basic, even from how to wear the robe. And I have seen some Bhikkhunis who do not know that this robe has the upper side and lower side. You know, so even the robe itself, we have to study how to handle the robe, how to fold the robe when we remove the robe from our body, how to pick up the rope again when we want to wear it. You know, all these in details. It's you really need a teacher. You really need a preceptor to guide you with holding your hand to do this properly. So this is receiving alms bowl, and this picture using that the salmonary, just newly ordained salmonary in front of their parents. They receive alms bowl from the parents. And then the training at mealtime. This is a training at mealtime. The Uposatha, the main shrine, it's very important that we have Sima. Sima means boundary, Sima consecration. We must have Sima consecration. And then we have to learn. This is only when you become bhikkhunis. They don't teach you when you are a samanari. You have to learn the verses to remove the former Sima. But remove the constipation before you start giving a new consecration. And you have to know how to mark out the boundaries of the eight directions. This does not come by text, this training. And this particular Sima consecration does not happen on a daily basis. It will happen only when you have a new temple. And when are you going to have a new temple? You know, it's maybe once in your lifetime. Many monks in my country have never been to Sima consecration, have never trained for Sima consecration. But for us bhikkhunis, because this is new, so you know, even one bhikkhuni staying over there, she all already wanted a Sima in her place. So we have to learn how to consecrate the Sima, how to remove, how to point the area. You have to mark out the area of Sima. This is on that side, it's marked by stone. On this side, it's marked by water. Like that, you know. So we have all this have to be trained. Have to be trained by a teacher. Then I would like to talk about requirements of full ordination. Yes, I take Venerable Champa's question about Sikkhamana. Yes, Sikkhamana is actually Samaneri, but I call them intensive Samaneri. That is, they already know that last 2 years they will become Bhikkhuni. They have full intention to become Bhikkhuni. So they have to be announced in front of the Bhikkhuni Sangha. I think I will come to that in the latter part of my presentation. So, the requirement for full ordination, Sima, you have to have Sima, you have to have the Sangha to give you ordination. The candidates must be proper. Like if you are asking for full ordination, but you are only 18 years old, then it means that the candidates do not have requirement. And the last one is procedure of ordination, the Kamavaja. You must have preceptor, you must have Kamavaja Jariya to actually make pronouncement. This is how they will say that this Venerable Dhamma Bhavita, she is a disciple of Dhamma Nanda, she is asking for ordination. The Sangha has any problem, has any problem. If you do have problems, if you do not agree, please make known 3 times. They have to make this pronouncement 3 times. When the Sangha remains silent, then the 4th time will make pronouncement that this Venerable Dhamma Bhavita, student of Dhamma Nanda, she is accepted in the Sangha. Like that, you know. So this is the proper Kamavaja. And when you do not have the requirements of full ordination, it is called Vipatti. Vipatti means lack of the requirements. This is when we had the case of ordination in Bangladesh that we were discussing. I sent you this requirements of full ordination. Yes, I talk about training again. Training in class during the 9 days temporary ordination. 4 hours in class, and then meditation is Sikkhamana. This is introduction in Thailand. Of course, it is from the Buddha's time. So I call it achieve to get back to the text. When I was ordained, when I received my Upasampada ordination from Sri Lanka, I came from Samaneri. At that time in Sri Lanka, they did not talk about Sikkhamana. But when we came back to Thailand, Thai monks started asking whether we were trained as Sikkhamana before. So now we are very concerned and we are focusing on this giving Sikkhamana before they receive full ordination. So here I say that Sikkhamana is an intensive samaneri. So the person must be at least 18 years old, because 2 more years as Sikkhamana, then you will be fully 20 years old, then you can be Bhikkhuni. And then she has to take 6 Anudhamma, which without break for 2 years. What is this 6 Anudhamma? The 6 Anudhamma is actually the 10 precepts. The first 6 of the 10 precepts is Anudhamma. So you do not break for 2 years. Then she must be ordained by a Sangha, not only preceptor. Samaneri is ordained by one preceptor. She can be ordained anywhere. She can be ordained in a sala, in vihara, in ubosatha. But as Sikkhamana, you must be ordained within sima, and must be ordained by a chapter of minimum 5 bhikkhunis. So these are the difference between Sikkhamana and Samaneri. So you could say Sikkhamana is still a Samaneri, but intensive Samaneri before she goes towards higher ordination. So in Thailand now, in our temple, in Koh Yor in the south, and also in Chiang Mai, these 3 places, we emphasize on Sikkhamana to go back to the text and see that this is how it is. It has been prescribed in the text and we have to think closely to the text. With our nine days samaneri ordination, this one you could see the photo of the king and the queen and the king's mother. This was at the hospital where the king was, and we take all the newly ordained samaneris to offer merit to the king. And this one is in Wat Thettidaram. Wat Thettidaram, this is one place that I usually take my samaneris there to pay respect. There are altogether 52, is it 52? 52 bhikkhuni statue casted during King Rama the Third period. Very interesting. His daughter, she was 35 years old and she died. And the king had a great love for this daughter. So what he did, he actually built a temple for her. And in this particular temple, he casted 52 statue of bhikkhunis in different positions. Very, very interesting. Some of them are just having their hands like this, you know, like they're whispering to the next person, and the other one is holding a pin, what do you call it? Beetle nuts. It reminds you of a community of human beings, you know, community of bhikkhunis. Very interesting. So I usually take samaneris there to see. I call it searching for the root. Searching for the root. This is the statue that I mentioned. You see, they sit in a very, very casual way. The training again. This time, I think we had 30 of them, and because they themselves do not remember their name yet, their ordained name. Each one of them would have their ordained name, so we have to put a name tag for them. And this is a training. The next one is a training.Going for alms, the seminaries who will be going for alms, number one, will have to learn the chanting. You know, we have to give short blessing after receiving alms. And we are so well received by the people around the temple. In the beginning, I used to go out alone with just one bowl and a cotton bag on my shoulder.But after they have been overloading me with so many things, so finally we ended up going with a push cart with two big baskets, enough to actually, the food they received, we could actually feed about 40 people on weekends. Early this year, we had a senator here, you see, a senator, who is also pushing for legal status for the Pikuni. So she and her group came to visit us at the temple, and we had a good talk, explained to them where we are. This is the medicine Buddha that people like to come and pay respect.Now I would like to come back to the very first photo, first slide that I show you. You see the pink mark in this old map. We now have about 76 provinces, and out of these 76 provinces, in 20 provinces at least, we have Pikunis and Seminaries. So from the time that I was ordained 14 years ago up till now, it is quite a progress.To say that we have about 70 Pikunis and about 40 to 50 Seminaries. We are not counting the temporary one, you know, the temporary one that they are ordered only for 9 days. So this is where we are. And also we have started last year we have started network for Thai Pikuni Sangha to get together so that we meet 3 times a year, whatever issues that might come up that we would like to discuss together. This is one way of strengthening the Thai Pikunis so that we move with the same pace. And there might be some problems that we would like to deal together. We focus particularly that we are on Dharma Vinaya, that we are very, very keen that we move on the Vinaya properly. Yes, I think I come to the last slide. I would like also to mention about the Pikunis ASEAN countries. It shall focus only the connection that have made in Vietnam, in Indonesia, in Sri Lanka, and in Thailand. We came together and we were trained together by Sri Lankan, the invited senior Sri Lankan Pikunis to Thailand, to my place, and we were trained together. The Pikunis in this place, in these countries, in Vietnam, in Indonesia, and myself, I'm the youngest one among them, and I should have completed 12 masters by the end of this year. So we are already in line to become preceptor, to become upajaya. The one in Indonesia, Venerable Santini, she already is 14 years now. She has 14 years, 14 masters. And Venerable Lilpap, Dr. Lilpap, she has about 13 masters already. Dr. Lilpap is the one who organized international conference in Vaishali, international conference in Vaishali. That ordination was very, very effective because it helped the Pikunis in Vietnam to actually be able to get together. And now they have six Pikunis in Vietnam. So even though we started more or less at the same time, what the bhikkhus in Thailand prosper faster, not prosper, I should not use the word prosper, spread out faster. Number one, because Thailand is a Buddhist country. It's a Buddhist country. Whereas in Indonesia, it's a Muslim country, you know, difficult enough. And then in Vietnam, also they have political restriction, I would say. So, but yet it is important that we have to, how to say, lean on each other. We have to be depending on each other so that we keep the Vinaya intact. Like, suppose if I want to become preceptor, if I want to become Upajaya, to give Upasambhadaya, I will have to invite Venerable Liu Pap, Dr. Liu Pap, and Venerable Dr. Santini to actually come and help me as Kammavajajara. Vice versa, I also go and help them. If they have ordination in their place, I also will go and help as Kammavajajara. So this is the, how to say, exchange between the countries, and very important, Bhikkhuni issue is not local. Bhikkhuni issue is international. So that's why we have to be supportive of each other. So as you see, Venerable Chikme will see that, oh, we do have nuns from other places coming, like we have Venerable Taraka, a Tibetan, born in India, but now she's in the United States. She also come to live in a monastic setting. Very important that we provide this monastic setting for us women so that we can come together and how to say, and share our learning, share our experience, and sometimes also share problems and how to solve problems together. We still have time, so we'll help me with the questions. Yes, Dr. Kanchana is asking about the coming ordination at our temple. As we are building Vihara, this Vihara is Yasothara Vihara, and it's going to be able to house many more people. So, but towards the end of the year, December the 5th, we are planning to give ordination to 108 Samaneris. This is only for 9 days. But some people abroad, some foreigners already have been asking whether it is possible that they can come and receive ordination, temporary ordination. One, what you call it, registration already came in from the United States. So, yes, we plan to make it big, to celebrate the Vihara. So, but for those, yes, and now I come back to Venerable Damadina about the medicine Buddha. Yes, in the beginning they thought that Damananda has gone crazy. She has become Mahayana. I took ordination in Theravada tradition. This medicine Buddha, very interesting. Before I was ordained, I saw him in my meditation 7 years before I was ordained. And once when I was ordained, I thought maybe I remember again, recall this vision of the medicine Buddha, or maybe the medicine Buddha might want me to continue, you know, helping others. So I cast that medicine Buddha. I don't see that medicine Buddha is Mahayana, but actually it's a personification of the Buddha. But you say that when you talk about the quality of the Buddha, that as a healer, as a doctor, then we make it blue. We learn this from the Tibetan because it comes from what you call that stone, lapis lazuli. Lapis lazuli is blue. and the Tibetan people are already using this stone for medicinal purpose. So when they want to talk about the Buddha, who is a healer, who actually helped us, not physically only, not physical only, but also spiritual, to uplift us, so we make him in blue. So that, it is true, it is not part of our Thai culture, but to talk about the Buddha as a medicine Buddha, the Buddha has always this quality already. That's how I see it. And I think he has been very successful, because when people see, come and pay respect to him, he's very welcoming. Very welcoming, and you know, the space that we provided in front of him, people like to come and sit with him. She's asking whether I have any examples of people who actually paid respect to him and actually feel positive. There are two cases of operation. One of my friends who had heart operation, and we were reciting the Medicine Buddha Sutra mantra for her. And when she came back to her consciousness, she did not feel the pain at all. So the family was very joyful. And in my case also, I had operation early this year. I didn't feel pain after coming out of operation, the major operation. So at least these are some of the examples that I could share. Yes, thank you, Dr. Kanchana here, who is in the office with me. She reminded me that the Malaysian group, they came early this year to pay respect and to offer the flower. You see the flower on two sides, very beautiful, and help donating. How to say, paid for the Buddha. We have made small amulets, you know, for people to, they like to have a replica of the big Buddha. So they paid for 100, maybe 100, but did not take the Buddha amulets, but for us to give to others. So that is also a very interesting cross-cultural kind of thing. The people in Malaysia, when they heard about it, they come. And this lady, who was very interested, she could not walk, so she was just waiting for the group. But she prayed to him from a distance, you know, she could not go inside. And somehow, she recovered. So she came back to him to actually help to construct a path around the Vihara. Yes, Venerable Champa, yes, Sikamana is considered to be one level of Samaneri, but higher than Samaneri. So as we sit in our city, it will be Pikunese, most senior, down to most junior. And then the next one will be most senior of the Sikamana, down to the Sikamana, the junior Sikamana, then Samaneri. Yes, Venerable Analio, the 1928 decision by the Sangha, the pretext before he actually gave this order was because the ordination was wrong at that time, 1928. It was wrong. It was not, I really believe that it was not done like a set of monks even, maybe just one monk. So the ordination procedure was wrong, really not correct. That's why, in order to stop cases like that, it was important that the Sangharaja had to order the Thai bhikkhus. That in this situation, you cannot do it. But now, 80 years afterwards, the kind of ordination that we have taken from Sri Lanka is done properly. It's done properly. So I really think that the order should be lifted. About the passport, Venerable Champa, about the passport, no, we still go by Mrs. Miss and Mrs. in our passport. And yes, the Mechi also go by lay, as lay person. Yes, our supporters are both Thais and Chinese. Thailand is a very strange country. The Thais and the Chinese are so well mixed, so well mixed. So they have taken Thai names. So you could see that, okay, they may look fairer than the local Thais who might be darker. But they blended in so well, both Thais and Chinese blended in so well. And we have been supported, our temple have been supported by both. The senators are, some of the senators are taking very seriously to help us by changing. Oh, I need to explain this. In the Thai Sangha, apart from the Vinaya, they also have the Sangha Act. The Sangha Act, this is a legal body, another legal body. So in this Sangha Act, the very first line, it says that the Sangha means Bhikkhu Sangha, which is, we know that according to the Buddha, Sangha means people and bhikkhuni. But in Thai, in this Sangha Act, it says Sangha means Bhikkhu Sangha and Artha Sangha. Now the word Artha Sangha is intriguing. Then they explain. Artha Sangha means Chinese and Vietnamese. First, this group of senators were trying to add the Bhikkhuni Sangha here together with the Chinese and Vietnamese. But then later, they thought it is wiser to just simply to leave it there. Sangha means Bhikkhu Sangha, that is the Thai Sangha, and other Sanghas, and just leave it there. So it will be inclusive. Can be Chinese, can be Vietnamese, can be Bhikkhuni Sangha. Yes, so we are at this stage that the senators are helping us to find out how are we going to do the best. And very interesting, the Thai monks kind of warn me, don't get into, what do you call it? The Sangha. Don't come under the council. Don't come under the Sangha council, because then you cannot, like the monks, you know, they don't have freedom. So as people, we are not legal, but we are not accepted legally, but we are also not illegal. So to say, we are in a very strange situation. So don't come in. The monks told us, don't come in under this council of elders. But so right now, I think if we come in at all, we will come just like the Chinese and the Vietnamese Sangha. That is, they will be directly under the Sangha Raja, but not under the cabinet of the Sangha, so to say. To answer to Venerable Champa, not up till now. We are more concerned about other things rather than just to have the Bhikkhuni names in. Oh yes, thank you, Venerable Damadina. She reminded me that can read out the question for those who listen to the audio only. Whenever Bhikkhu Analayo said that, would you recommend Sikkhamana training for other countries where a Bhikkhuni order is being started? Yes, Whenever Analayo, yes, I would recommend very strongly, because Sikkhamana is a stage that that seminary, now become conscious that I want to become bhikkhuni, and you have to be serious of it. Yes, and it will have to say, with respect to the Vinaya, with respect to the text, it was done previously in the Buddha's time, and it should be, we should start again. Whenever Champa said, what is the benefit of having the bhikkhu enter into the passport? For me, I don't see any benefit. Oh yes, whenever Champa said that in my last question, I was referring to bhikkhus and not bhikkhunis. Yes, coming back to Sikkhamana again, I think with respect to the Buddha and with respect to the Vinaya, we have studied, we have texts to read, and when we just started, I think it's very important that we start properly, do it as close as possible to what is meant. And for Samaneri to become Sikkhamana, when you are in the context of Buddhist community, it can be done. It can be done and should be done. Whenever Champa asks, so it has no legal consequences like social insurance, etc. No, it doesn't have any legal consequence. Venerable Dhammadina asks, how does your community handle the unbroken keeping of the six Anudhamma? The fact that they have to keep it intact, you know, for those who are serious. Only those who are serious, you know, will be able to come forward. That is already one screening. If you are not serious, then remain as Samaneris. And also we see that they have not been able to follow properly. In our temple, we have both Samaneris as well as Sikkhamana. Sikkhamana, those who already know the commitment, and that all the nuns, all the both bhikkhus and sikkhamanas in my temple now, we have discussed, and all of them said taking it for life. And older one like myself, there's another one, we also say that we would like to down rope, so to say. I hope that we will not become burden to the sangha. Yes, thank you. Just recently, well, Venerable Champa and myself, you know, we have been involved discussing about this, the case of the, giving ordination to bhikkhunis in Bangladesh, and the monk who actually gave ordination was imposed Brahmadanda. This Brahmadanda was given by the Buddha to Channa in the Buddha's time. But I followed this case and I found out that this venerable, this one venerable, he is from Bangladesh, but he now lives in Bodh Gaya. He has been, in order to help uplift the women, he gave them Samaneri ordination, not bhikkhuni, Samaneri ordination. 6 of them in Bodh Gaya and 17 of them in Bangladesh. Now the Sangha, the Bangladesh Sangha, there are 2 Sanghas. The first one came originally, maybe larger group, and the smaller group is the lineage that they have taken it from Myanmar. This smaller group made an announcement, imposed Brahmadanda on the monk who gave ordination to Samaneris. So I have been able to get in touch with this monk, so he told me the story. And he said he only gave them Samaneri ordination. And now the women got scared. So 16 or 17 of them, they all, many of them disrobed, and only 5 left. But these five, among the five, one of them is like a teacher, like a meditation teacher. So she is still there. But they're very poor, very poor. And I would like to offer help by maybe if they like, if they can come to Thailand, we can financially sponsor them to come to Thailand and receive training with us, stay with us, so that they experience monastic lifestyle for 1 month, for 2 months maybe. But the Venerable said that they don't speak English. So we run into another problem. Unless we have someone who can speak English, then inviting them to come to us will be meaningful to them. When Venerable Dhammadinda asks, are there cases starting the Sikkhamana training all over again? Is there group shame about it? I'm not sure. There are three places in Thailand. There are three places that is giving Sikkhamana. In my place, in the south, in Koh Yo. Here is Koh Yo. There is Koh Yo. Is in the south somewhere. My place is here. And then another place in Chiang Mai, up north here. So you have one in the north, one in the center, and one in the south. And also Yesothorn, in northeast, they also give Sikkhamana training. It is Sikkhamana ordination. Do they perform Upasambada? Whenever Champa asks, do they perform Upasambada and other Sangha Kamma together? Who is this? What they apply to whom? Sangha Kamma. Oh, okay. Yes. Is there any lineage between Thailand, Myanmar, and Sri Lanka today? Yes. Yes, the lineage between Thailand and Sri Lanka very closely about the Pikunis, not Myanmar. Myanmar still do not have Pikunis. Which Sangha is more senior? Sri Lanka would say that because they received their lineage from Thailand, you know, so Thailand would be more senior than Sri Lanka, because Sri Lanka lost the lineage of both Bhikkhus and Bhikkhunis. So therefore, I think Thailand will be more senior than Sri Lanka. But I'm not sure about Myanmar. Between Theravada monks in Sri Lanka and Thailand, very close relationship. Oh yes, Venerable Dhammadina asked very interesting question. I meant if one has to start again, having broken the precepts, there is no confession to make up for it, so that is visible, and one has to start again as laity. May notice the nun is staying longer than the expected 2 years as a seminary or Sikkhamana. We have not really faced such case yet, but we only hope that all of them who have taken Sikkhamana will eventually become Bhikkhunis within 2 years. But I also have some difficulties, practical difficulties, like as Upajaya, if this particular person has been Sikkhamana for full 2 years, it is my responsibility to arrange for ordination for her. But in case we are waiting for a larger group, maybe she end up staying as Sikkhamana for 3 years. So that's not proper again, you know. So there is also Vinaya cases, Vinaya points that we need to consider. when Rinpoche Champa asked, so during Vesak in Vietnam, for example, the Theravadin would not have Uposatha together. Other Theravadins, I think they should have Uposatha together if they come from the same, what you call it, Vinaya lineage. You know, Dharmagupta and Theravada may not be residing the Pratimoksha, together. But if they are Theravada, the same lineage, then they can reside the Pratimoksha together. Maybe one more question. Yes, my Dr. Kanchana asked me if I'm going to Myanmar this year. Towards the end of this year, maybe in November, INET is arranging a conference in Myanmar, and they said that they will put a Bhikkhuni issue for discussion, maybe as workshop, that particular conference also. So I think this is about time. I forgot to look at the time that we started, but I think this is about 1.5 hours. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Venerable Champa, Venerable Analayo, Venerable Damandina. When are you going to come back and visit in Thailand? Sadhu.
Mm-hmm.